This past week or so, a little bit more than a week, I had two kind of interesting conversations where I really felt, and I don't know if you've felt this before in conversations, where even in the middle of the conversation and definitely coming out of it, I was like, I think God is really telling me to sit for a second and soak in what was happening and get some reflection, and God's going to keep working on what we were talking about in me for a little while after this. And it happened, though, in two very different ways. One of them was a really exciting, engaging, energizing conversation, and the other one, honestly, was a little bit awkward and ponderous, but I felt God speaking to me in both circumstances. The first one was last Saturday, actually. We had a Easter egg hunt here in the courtyard and a number of other really great activities that kids could do, crafts and things like that. Lots of good help from folks, and one of the people that came in to help us with that in particular was Diana Hancock's daughter, Sarah. I don't know how many of you know her very well, but she was here helping out. This year, I've gotten to know her pretty well, actually, because she works for an organization that helps people foster and adopt kittens and cats in particular that she rescues. And so while we were staying home, our family was like, we'd like to have some extra bonus fuzzy cuteness around, so let's see if we can work with Sarah. And so we fostered a number of kittens, got to see her every time she'd come and drop stuff off with us. And so it was fun to get to see her. We were catching up a little bit. And over the course of that conversation, she was talking about getting ready for her wedding and connecting with some friends who will hopefully be able to come and do that. And one of the people that she told me about that was a friend of hers that she's looking forward to seeing again is someone who is multilingual. And English is his second or third language, but he speaks four or five altogether from lots of different language families, which is pretty impressive, I thought. But she was saying one of the things that's funny whenever they get together is she feels like they always have at least one conversation where she's having to do some extra translation for him about the English language. And it typically ends up being about more cultural stuff than like the words themselves. So it's slang or colloquialisms, the things that we take for granted and just think of as normal conversation. But if you weren't used to English and you were thinking of things more literally, that you might get a little bit confused. So she was telling me in particular one time where she was telling him, hey, do you want to come over and hang out next week? We're all going to be over at my house hanging out, and it would be really great if you could join us. And she said, I noticed he just gave me this really, really strange look. And so before I moved on, I was like, is there anything going on you're confused about? I need to explain or anything? And he said, I'd like to see you, but I don't know if I want to hang out. Like, what are you going to be like all, is that a new trend to like hang on the side of windows or something and like see who can do it the longest? Or I don't understand what you're trying to do. And so that's like kind of a silly one, right? I mean, some of us may remember from history books, I always thought this was fascinating, there's that trend of flagpole sitting. So maybe it's not like the most far-fetched thing that Americans would do some really strange thing to spend time and have fun together, like hanging out of windows, but obviously we know that's not what she meant, just meant spending time together. And she was like, there are other times when that's happened too, especially when you hear somebody describing something with a slang term that also has another literal meaning in our language. So if you hear a kid describing something as really tight, right, doesn't always mean like, oh, I'm so constricted or I can barely, you know, walk around in my pants. It's just something is really neat or cool, right? Something is cool. Or now kids have switched up the temperature gauge and say that things are fire. And so you don't know, like, which thing is supposed to be which. Or if you say that you want to chill out, is someone who doesn't understand English thinking, like, is this like the polar bear club? I'm going to have to go over there and be absolutely freezing. That doesn't sound fun. Can we do something else? And she thought of this and was kind of giving me a hard time because I forget what we were talking about, but I was describing something as being a little bit squirrely. And so she was like, yeah, if my friend heard you talking right now, he'd be thinking, you know, does something have like a bushy tail or skittering around? Like, what the heck does Rob mean when he says that something is squirrely? And so we have, you know, these things of where there's that disconnect, where we want to be on the same page, but something maybe doesn't all hold together the way that we would like. So then the other conversation that was a little bit more awkward and ponderous. This past week, there's a monthly meeting of different pastors and church representatives in the Gahanna area called the Gahanna Ministerial Association. So I went to do that and see some of the other pastors and folks here in the community. And during that, there's always someone leading kind of a devotional thing. And one of the pastors, for his devotional, said, I actually want to have a discussion together, and it'll help me in my prep for my sermon this week. He's giving a sermon on a passage from 2 Chronicles where there's some men from a certain area who are described as understanding what the times were and knowing what to do in response to the times. And he said, that's a really admirable thing for people to be described as and thinking about ministry, and I'd like to hope that we could learn how to be that in our church, in any church. And so I wanted to hear you, you know, give me some feedback. What are your thoughts about how we could follow God and being those types of people? And so he framed it with a few questions that he wanted us to respond to that he asked. So the first question he said was, what does the culture think of the church? And then the second question he asked was, how should the church minister to the culture in such times? And those are good questions. The whole idea of what he's talking about is important. But I have to admit, like I said, for me, it was hard to get into this because my brain went off and said, well, what part of the culture? Or what part of the church? Are we saying some part of the culture has an opinion about? Neither of these things are monolithic and all the same. There's lots of different nuance and characteristics for any of these things. And then also, even deeper for me, I was wondering, is the premise of setting up these two things as being completely separate? There's the church that's over here, there's the culture that's over here, and then there's this big gulf automatically, and they're completely separate. Is that really accurate? And even if it's accurate or not accurate, is it useful in the way that God would want us to think about these things? Because I completely agree, and you've probably noticed and heard from some of my sermons, with the perspective that there are, in fact, values and ways of being that come from God to us that are distinct from other things that can be lifted up or presented to us as options in our culture and the world around us, in our lives. But it's also really, really common that when God talks about lifting up these values, that God is saying that as much or more to the people who think that they are the most religious and the closest to God, as he would to people who are assumed to be the farthest from God or the least religious. And so there's not always this easy division that would have us be how we think about these issues or how we think about living in those values, even if they are different from other values. Sometimes the values that God wants to correct are actually right within us that when we think that we're the closest to God. So there's a little bit more nuance to that, and it was hard for me to get into the conversation. I didn't want to, like, create a big, you know, like I'm planting my flag and completely redirecting everything the group is doing. But then because I thought about this a little bit differently, it was hard for me to get into the conversation. Now, you might be wondering, like, how do those conversations relate together? What was it that God was showing me throughout the week? How does that relate to our scriptures, to where we are as a church, what we can think about? And so I want us to ground ourselves in the place now where I think many of us are feeling that we have a lot of hope and excitement and a sense of potential because the way that life has been for the last year or so is starting to change. We're starting to see those opportunities to have things be different than what we've experienced and that's often been a struggle over the last year. In particular, we're having more opportunities of how we can be the church, how we can be God's family together that are becoming available, like us being here together in person right now, which has been hard for a little while. But we also know that there are still some things going on around us, going on in our own lives, that's really difficult. And I don't think that we should see our goal, as all of this is happening, as being, we just want to get to a place where we can act like none of the past year happened. We like the sense of normalcy. We like the ability to return to things that we really care about and are important to us. But I don't think we want to say, let's learn nothing from this. Or let's not see what some of this may be that God can use to show us something about how we continue forward, maybe even in different ways than we could if we didn't have this experience. So how do we build on and celebrate the sense of hope that we're having right now? That's really great and important. How do we learn from and respond to those struggles that are still happening or that we remember from recent times? It's really good for us to think about the relationship of our faith and all of our connections as a local church. right? How does that then relate to our experience in our day-to-day lives, especially with things that maybe don't automatically click for us as being something that our faith can be relevant to or that we can have God speak to us about? Right? But what's the best way to do that? Is it the way that I experienced in the GMA conversation with other pastors, or is there something else that God lifts up to us as an example that we can learn from? And also, it's really important to acknowledge that sometimes when we try to make those connections, when we try to learn things from God for ourselves, that there is a disconnect, that there's a mistranslation, like Sarah has experienced with her friends, that we can relate to a little bit. But again, what is the best way for us to bridge those needs for translation, those potential disconnects? What's the best way for us to have God bring us together when it seems like we might be separate? I really think that this is a prime time for us to ask God, how can we learn about all of these questions? We're coming back to be together in new ways again. So how do we come back to a way that is meaningful to the things that need God in our lives and in the lives of people around us? And this is not a brand new issue. I think it would not surprise you that as long as there have been people, we have been having these types of feelings in different seasons of our lives. And as long as there have been people having these feelings in different seasons of our lives, God has been coming into our lives to help us navigate it and to give us resources for how we can grow in our faith and bring God's life to other people around us too. And so that's what our new sermon series is going to be, because this is our context. Because we're being able to convene together in ways that we haven't been for a little while. Because we are still acknowledging that there are things that are not completely fixed, even as we're seeing hope, and we want to bring God's life into that, we're going to try to learn those exact things. How do we be God's people in these unique circumstances? And one of the in particular ways that we can do it is from the way that God helped other churches as they were coming together and they were in a culture that was around them that they sometimes connected to, sometimes felt disconnection from. And God helped them navigate all of that. And so we'll be going forward after this in a series of Paul's letters. In the New Testament, right, Paul wrote a lot of letters to churches that were forming in different cities in the Roman Empire. And so they had God's values lifted up. They also had their cultural experience in cities like Corinth, Galatia, Colossae, Philippi, Ephesus. And so we're going to see how Paul, through God's inspiration, helped them all understand their circumstances and how God was moving in those circumstances to help them be life-giving people for themselves and for people around them. And our verses today show us some groundwork for understanding all of those things. And so we see Paul's ministry to one of the places that he didn't end up writing another letter to that we hold on to as scripture in Athens. But that gives us a really beautiful model. And then we see that this is something that God has been doing for years and years and centuries and millennia, because it goes all the way back even to the prophet Samuel and his anointing to David. So what are those things that we can notice that we can ground ourselves in for our own experience as being God's people today? The first thing may feel like a little bit of a surprise. And that is that when we are following God, when we are trying to connect with people around us, we do not take God with us to people we are connecting with. In fact, God is already in those places that feel out there from us. And we are going to join what God is doing, which is a little bit different than sometimes maybe we feel the pressure to, like, there's this thing out there that is disconnected from God, and I have to, you know, get God, like, as into my hands as I possibly can and take him there so that everything gets translated right. And it's hopefully a relief to see that God is already tilling the soil whenever we make these connections. Samuel, right, goes to an unexpected place, not a prominent tribe of Israel to find the next king, not the most distinguished family. And God keeps pulling him and pulling him and pulling him and pulling him until he gets it right to know who God is anointing and how God is going to bring leadership into his people. It's not the first person you expect. It's not the place you would expect. It's not the thing that works exactly the way you think everything is. Samuel's not taking God as like a divining rod to the person. God is there and saying, God's saying, I will show you, Samuel. You're not going to drag me along. And Paul, the same way, sees when he interacts with the Athenians how there are things in their culture and in their experience that already connects them with God and that will help them have that encounter with God than if they felt like someone was like bludgeoning with something from outside of their experience. Paul starts in the synagogue when he goes to Athens, but he keeps finding God saying, there's more people to talk to. There's more things that I can show you, not just in the synagogue, but out into the surrounding area, out into the marketplace, out into the Areopagus, which is like the place where everyone discussed all of their ideas and their philosophical things. And then what did he see when he encountered with them and found the ways that God was speaking to everyone who was gathered? He didn't even start with quotations from the Hebrew Bible. He started with the altar to the unknown God that was in their own very Areopagus and temple. He started with quotes of their poets and their philosophers. That quote, "In him we live and move and have our being," is not from our Bible. It's from a Greek philosopher. Same thing as "we are his offspring," Greek philosopher. And then Paul, even as he's describing the way that God works in the world, he acknowledges how God did have a special relationship with the Jewish people, but that God was also always moving things and setting things up and acting on behalf of all people in ways that they might recognize and seek and call out for who God was, even in who they were and who they started with. And Paul was willing to acknowledge that for himself, for other Jewish followers, and for bringing those connections to people who didn't maybe have that same original foundation. And that we can continue to learn as much about our relationship with God in our Bible now from all those things that Paul said, even if it wasn't from the original, most associated scriptures or words or lessons at the time. Being willing to acknowledge this will push a little bit on some of the desires and temptations that we can have to be in control of the way our faith works and how we follow God. But opening our perspective up to all of the ways and places that God is working, even that are different than what we're used to, it's not about us feeling guilty, like you need to be more open to things, stop being more closed-minded. That's not the point. It's about the opportunity to see the fullness of God continue to open up as we have more and more interactions, as we have more and more experiences, as we see more and more of the amazing parts of God that are beyond what we start with for ourselves. Good analogy for this that always comes to mind for me, I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Good Will Hunting. It's older for a little while, but it's been around for a bit. And this scene, I think, is often lifted up, even if you haven't seen the whole movie. There's a counselor working with a young kid who's really smart, genius-level person, but hasn't had a lot of life experience and is really kind of angry about some things that he's had, so the counselor is helping him. And they have an interaction. Robin Williams is playing the counselor. And he says, you know a lot, and you've been ragging on me a lot about certain things, but I realized that there's a whole lot of experience that you don't understand, as smart as you are, all the knowledge that you've accumulated. So he says, if I ask you about art, you give me the skinny about every art book ever written, every part of history, every part of form and technique, but you couldn't tell me what it smells like in the Sistine Chapel, or what it's like to look up at that ceiling and be overwhelmed by the beauty. If I asked you about women, you'd give me a list of your most notable and beautiful favorites, but you couldn't tell me about what it's like to feel waking up to someone who helps you be truly happy. If I asked you about love, you'd quote soliloquies and poems and sonnets, but you've never looked at someone and been totally vulnerable, known that they could level you with their eyes. And you've never known what it's like to be their everything, to be with them through cancer, to sleep every night next to their bed, holding their hand, sitting up, because you refuse to leave their side because of the support that you want to offer and the support that being with them gives to you. He was remembering his relationship with his wife. What we have, what we know from God, from our own experience, is good. And it's a wonderful foundation to have those familiar things that God offers us. But we can also be excited about each new step and place and thing that God can open up to us beyond that initial thing that we're familiar with. When we have these encounters with people that are different, when we're open to see that God might be doing something in places that are not our home base, but that God can give us amazing meaning to when we find ourselves there. The next thing that we learn from starting with seeing that God is everywhere that we can end up going is that when we have these interactions with people or situations that are not what we expected, not what we automatically assume what faith is about, some things are affirmed that we're used to, that other people are used to, but some things are also developed or even challenged. And again, it happens for everyone, for us and for them. For Samuel, he needed to be stretched about what makes a good leader. He started with something that was true, and he had that affirmed, that the leader should be accountable to God. So he's not going to go around and pick a leader that he likes best. He's going to be making sure that he's having who the leader is and how their leadership is affirmed be led by God. But he has to have new things expanded by God and challenged and developed for how you know what good, godly leadership looks like. And who has those characteristics? God looks at the heart, not at the outward appearance, right? That famous verse from that story. And then in Acts, we see Paul and the primarily first early Jewish Christians having some things affirmed and having some things challenged. And we see the Gentiles in Athens having some things affirmed and having some things challenged. For the Jewish Christians, the idea of who God is accessible to is stretched, right? God has that experience with the Jewish people, revelation through that relationship. But Paul is also saying, we're discovering that God has been accessible to everyone through all this time. And that's a new way of us understanding God, and we can find blessing in that. For the Gentiles, they're affirmed that God has been with them throughout their time. But they're also stretched to say, but God is not trying to come to you as an idol, as something that you are in control of, something that is made by human hands. We are accountable to God. We don't box God in. And so all of them together find out, what is it that makes God powerful and worthy of worship? It's about God coming to earth, not to dominate, but to serve. It's about God connecting with the oppressed, not the oppressors. And it's about God desiring to be and build a new kind of people from all parts of the world that God created in all communities so that they can be mutually transformed together in beautiful relationship rather than just having the ways that people interact, especially between what's cultural and what's familiar, as being about competition or being about exchange, that there's shared transformation. Many of you maybe have had experiences for yourselves. You have loved ones, friends, kids, relatives who are part of groups that people interact with to try to be helpful a lot. And you may have heard the saying, I learned even more from them than I think they learned from me. It's a really meaningful phrase. But I think when we've had those experiences of it being close to home, we've also had times when we know that sometimes that can be said a little bit insincerely. It's like a way of showing, like, see, I know I'm not supposed to act like I'm better than somebody else, and this is a really good way to say it. And I don't think people really mean poorly when they say that, but it's something that can happen where that nature of mutuality is not maybe fully understood. And I bring this up because I know that I have been that person before. When I was in seminary, I worked at an after-school and summer camp program with elementary schoolers. It was a Christian school, and I remember there was a time when we were having kind of like an end-of-the-year celebration and talking about different things that we had done to work with the kids. And one of the things that I had done was I helped lead the worship songs. And with kids, as you know, right, a lot of times leading worship songs means like doing motions and, you know, looking really energetic and stuff. And so for whatever reason, I don't remember the full context, but basically the point is I was trying to say, you know, like, as I've done worship with the kids, I know I'm in seminary, and so people think that my job is to, like, teach the kids all these things about worship, but I feel like I've learned the joy of worship in moving around as much as if I've taught them anything at all. And one of my buddies, a fifth grader named Sean, came up to me afterwards, and he kind of caught me in having that insincerity because he said, you know, Rob, you told me one time when I was complaining about doing something for another activity and I had to help out, but I didn't really like it. I didn't feel like I was good at it. You told me one time that, you know, you don't like leading worship with all the motions, and you feel really awkward and strange, But you just sometimes have to do things that aren't your favorite because it helps you connect with other people who do like that. Or you do things that are difficult to serve, and then it stretches you. And maybe it never stretches you to the point of loving it, but it still gives you a good, valuable experience. So which one's true? Do you have the joy of worship, or were you stretching yourself a little bit? And I kind of realized, yeah, you got me. But he went on, which was really great, and he said, I know that you care about and respect us, whether you learn from us or not. Because, by the way, I don't learn from you all the time, but I like and respect you with other parts of our relationship. It's not just about, like, one type of way of being together. And so suddenly, then I could really say, for real, yeah, I learn from them as much as they learn from me, probably more. But it wasn't because I was trying to establish that in a sort of fake way. The point, again, is not to just say, let's force these lessons, or let's say that there's one particular thing. God wants us to have a spirit of mutuality with each other, to be open to each other, to know that God has more for us than we have to control God. And so those things will come, even if they look like different things than we first expect. And we shouldn't try to force it, but we do need to be open to the fact that it's not just about us creating one type of relationship or exchange, or someone else creating one type of relationship or exchange. We're all open to being formed by God together in the same way. Lastly, we see from these interactions that these values, these experiences of meeting God in the world where God already is, having these mutual relationships and opportunities to be formed by each other, they're not like a bonus cherry on top side appendage part of faith. They're a fundamental, central, foundational part of our faith and our relationship with God. For Samuel, he'd already seen that there was an attempt to have a ruler in Saul. David was going to be the second king. And that even trying to follow God with that type of ruler could go wrong. That there was something more than just, God told me one time to anoint this person and then we're set. That they needed to learn and have that foundational thing of how is it that we really are accountable to God together as a culture and that we want our leaders to be that way too. Because we know that in the future, David got anointed right then, but that didn't mean David was going to be perfect forever either. And so David needed to be held to those same types of values of what God sees in the heart and not just the most powerful, impressive looking person or the person with all of the power at his disposal. That David was going to try to be too big for his britches, and there needed to be prophets who kept saying, your heart needs to get right, and we need to continue to seek that out. That's right at the center of what we're doing. And for Paul, for he and the early Jesus movement, they were realizing what God's salvation in its fullness was really going to be. They were still growing and expanding and seeking this out. And he was learning, as he had these interactions with people, that the fullness of God's salvation, in fact, would not be experienced until everything and everyone was brought fully together by God's Spirit. And the church struggled with that. We continue to struggle with that. We're going to see that in our series coming up. That's what we're going to be trying to work on together. So we're going to see how God helped open up people because of exactly these types of interactions with each other, with people around them. And even though we see good examples to learn from in the Bible, we can admit we don't have the silver bullet. We haven't solved this. We're going to still have our own things that we're learning too. And God's going to keep speaking to us from the learning that happened before, the learning that's happened in church history, and the learning that God will still offer us and call us into even today. God's going to make sure and doesn't leave us in one place that we're pulled all the way into every important transformation, every important reconciliation that God has to offer, every aspect of new life, God keeps bringing out so that we don't miss it. And so our center of our faith helps us experience the full reaches of our faith that God ultimately offers. In English, there's kind of a helpful thing for us to think about this, for how we continue to connect with God. I'm not always a big fan of language-specific kind of puns to understand things. Like one popular one is to say, being justified is just as if I never sinned. Have you heard that one before? now. Maybe that's just one I've heard a lot. But it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of cool, right? Like, justified, and then what's a good way to understand it? Just as if I. And there's that connection. But you couldn't say that to someone who speaks Spanish or French or Arabic or Mandarin or, you know, so it only goes so far, but it's nice for us now. But there's another one that I think of where we are continually called in our faith to what? To follow God. And it gives that sense of, like, we're going to be continually in motion, that we're going to keep finding God in surprising places, that we're going to have maybe a sense of continued direction. We don't say we're going to circle back to God, right? Do you use that sometimes? Typically you mean, like, right, we're going to go do a bunch of stuff that's separate, and then we're going to circle back and end up being on the same page again, right? And so we don't say that our faith is we circle back on Sunday, we do whatever, we circle back on Sunday, we do whatever, we circle back on Sunday. We say we follow God together. And so that helps us maybe remember how we can continually find God in wonderful, beautiful ways here together when we do circle back, but also in all the things we continue to do in all parts of our lives and all of our relationships. God will be there, and we can find and connect with God in all of those settings. So, like I said, we're going to be going through this series. There's going to be lots of interesting things that Paul will show us for people's cultural context at their cities back then that we will probably, in surprising ways, relate to and be able to have give good encouragement to our own faith. And so as part of that, I want us to have this question in mind for what we see from those lessons and then how we can connect it to our own lives right now today. And that is carrying with us the question, what is God up to here? And how do I join in? We can take that question with us anytime, any place, any interaction. So I want us to try to hold that in our heads. What is God up to here? And how do I join in? One of the ways, if you're interested, that we're going to do that to help us gather this and learn lessons continually throughout the next series is that we're going to have some ways to maybe have people talk about this during the service on Sundays. But also I'm going to have a post on Facebook just waiting that says that exact question. And if you ever have an interaction, see something that prompts that question to your brain, I want you to talk to me so maybe we can lift it up on Sunday. And I encourage you to put that on that exact post. It could be a story from your own life that you share, a thought that popped to your head. Could be a song or that you heard or a book that you read or a show that you watched that made you think, what is God doing here and how can I join in? It could be an article that you found. Could be a conversation with a friend that's willing to let you talk about it. Anything at all where you're like, God, just like Rob with that weird stuff with Sarah, the DMA, God, help me see, like, keep thinking about this. What is God doing here? How can we join in? I think it'll be really inspiring and encouraging when we can see all those ways that God is helping all of us do that. And then we can share it with each other. In that spirit, I'm going to ask Brent to come up. And I've been asking people to share some things that God's been teaching them in surprising ways over the last year with COVID. It's these exact type of experiences because it's been unfamiliar. And he'll also pray for our offering and how we try to serve God with all parts of our lives.